The Space God Memoirs. Episode 6. Early in the morning, as the sun hung like a thin sliver on the northern horizon, we came upon the first of the river towns. Mud was the main feature of the place, an orange-brown sort of mud from the banks of the river where the town stood. Barefoot children, their chests often covered in tumors and spiky growths, played in it, splashing and squishing into the puddles of mud that lay everywhere. The men and women both wore the mud almost like a second skin, smeared dry across their exposed flesh and faces. Off in the waterlogged fields, workers waded through dirty orange water, pulling at the leafy crop or hacking away at it with their scythes. The town itself consisted of what might have been 30 standing structures, mostly huts of twigs and old paneling, held together by that same ever-present mud, intermixed with a few makeshift houses made from the relics of the old world, rusted over shipping canisters, or the husks of old vehicles where entire families now squatted. On the outskirts, a battered old sign was scratched with the name Yevil.
"You wait here with the cart, Kef," said Burge, handing me the reins. "Me and Rayleigh gonna trade some old glass jars for supplies and refill our water skins. Figured it's best we don't take our full haul through here."
"Yup," I nodded. "Might be a few tech haters in there.
You never know with these river folk."
Thus I stayed with the cart, guiding at a distance off the road and concealing most of our load behind some shaggy shrubbery. I tossed Gildar a few leafy branches to occupy it while we waited. Then did my best to occupy myself, which basically consisted of me leaning up against the cart and juggling an old wrench. That is, until I had the thought that certain passers-by might consider a wrench to be one of those forbidden technologies, and then I promptly put it away. I took a cue from Gildar and busied myself chewing on a nearby twig. During the course of what felt like an hour, Burge and Rayleigh did not return. I stood there looking like a fool, chewing on my twig and twiddling my thumbs as mud-covered locals continued to pass me by. Near the end of that hour, I noticed that they were all going in the same direction, towards the town, not away from it. Break time? I shrugged. Their schedules didn't matter to me. As the sun continued to rise in the sky, my waiting spot continued to grow lonelier. My friends were still gone, hopefully engaged in some intense haggling with the locals and not getting lynched. Hardly anybody was passing by, not even the farmers going back to their fields. I tried passing time with the breathing exercises, figuring now is a good chance as any to get some practice in. I stared out at the fields outside of town as I breathed in and out, attempting to keep my focus in the present moment, watching the distant herds of Dugga meander through the grasses, the Govrin zipping overhead. But every time I would try and focus my thoughts, I would think back to my friends. Where the scrag were they? Or there'd be some random itch I'd just have to scratch. Or stupid little part of my mind was worried at what the passersby would think of me. So it was a big nope for my focus. During my second hour of waiting, 4 people walked past. 2 of them were skinny river kids who completely ignored me. The 3rd was a hunched old lady who I thought was going to ignore me as she hobbled by, a big bundle of sticks on her back. But before she was out of sight, the lady turned around, gave me a nasty scowl, and shook her head, muttering something to herself before turning away from me and walking out of sight. The 4th was a relatively non-muddy young man, with an oh-so-serious look on his face, marching along towards town like he thought he was a soldier. I was about to give him a friendly wave, then I saw the crimson cloak that was trailing behind him. Evolved one. Had to be with that cloak. There were a few of those guys in every town. Those particularly fervent members of the local religion who saw every piece of old junk as something blasphemous, part of the ancient sorcery that had led their gods to bringing down the retribution on this whole world. Thankfully, he passed without a comment, his eyes never even drifting in my direction. I breathed a sigh of relief as the young man walked into the distance. Then I realized he wasn't walking towards the town, but instead took a trail off to the right before disappearing behind some tall grasses. At that moment, curiosity overcame caution, and I decided to follow, albeit at a distance. Making sure the cart was still concealed, I began creeping steadily forward until I arrived at where the young man had split off from the road. From there, the village of Yevil was practically within throwing range. And it looked empty, not a person in sight. Off to my right, where the muddy wagon trail bisected a grain field, was the reason. I heard them before I saw them. A chorus of shouting, talking, and heckling. In the distance, I spotted the crowd huddled around the edges of what was likely an old quarry that stood between the town and their fields. At the edge of my vision, I caught a glimpse of what might have been a purple banner flapping in the wind. I took one more peek back at the town. It was dead quiet. Rayleigh and Burge were still conspicuously absent. Before I could second-guess myself, I tossed the hood over my head and dashed towards the commotion. As I got closer, I slowed my pace, falling into a casual slink as I kept my head low. The raucous noise increased as I got closer, and soon I could hear the sounds of shouting, mixed with cheers, and a pervasive background noise that sounded an awful lot like a chant. I drew closer still, and now I knew indeed that this was one of the old quarries, a terraced pit of flaky reddish stone. There were people too, mostly villagers, gathered around the sides of the pit and looking down into it like it was some amphitheater. Most were shouting and cawing, fists raised in the air or hands clasped in anticipation as they watched the show, which at my angle looked only like blurred movement. So I wove my way around the back of the crowd, grateful they were too distracted to spot me. Now at a better vantage, I could see the show they were so focused on. Two young men, down in the pit, both grasping crude knives in their hands and facing one another in some kind of gladiatorial match. Some local pit fight? No, I realized as I looked up at the purple banner I'd seen earlier, hanging from a long pole stuck into the ground. Deep purple, the insignia of a bloody, down-facing triangle on it. The evolved ones, followers of the Lords Beyond. I shook my head and looked away, ready to turn around at the first sign of discovery. Another glance into the crowd, and I could see the rest of them too. Men or women dressed in that shiny red armor they wore. The same color as their insignia, their cloaks fluttering behind them as they stood in a circle around the two men with knives. Again, my stomach clenched. I ducked down behind the nearby rock, eager to avoid discovery. I didn't want to have to excuse my presence here. Not to those yugs. Scrag, if they were around these parts again, it might complicate our journey. We'd have to be extra cautious in the towns, particularly with who we showed our cargo to. Just outside of the circle stood the priest, a man in a dark gray cloak that flowed around the silvery armor that decorated his chest, his face covered in a skull-like mask of the same silver, his hands clad in gauntlets. What in the scrag did I just walk into? I asked myself. That thought wasn't enough to overcome my curiosity. I stayed, crouched behind the rock and occasionally peeking over at the bizarre scene in the quarry.
"The time has come to prove yourselves at last," said the priest, his voice a metallic bellow. "For centuries, our people have struggled and strived. We have fought and we have built our lives up, all to show the gods our worthiness. We mortal races are like seeds of the Harn tree, it is said. Tiny and coarse things, with shells so thick that most will never emerge forth and grow into what they are meant to become. Yet like those seeds, so say the Lords Beyond, adversity will give us our chance to grow. Like when the fires spread across the grassy lands and leap up at the Harn tree, searing its seeds, it seems a terror. An act of destruction. But it is that very flame that finally opens up those tough seeds and allows some of them to spring forth life. In the midst of that devastation, those stubborn things finally get their chance. Such are we, seemingly ugly and weak things, and yet with the potential to become so much more. Here are our gods, returned with the fire." He continued, raising his voice. It is true. Their lights can once more be seen in the skies to those who are wise and observant. Their messengers walk this world. I know, for I've spoken to them at last. Not in visions like so many charlatans claim, but face to face. They have called me here, to this residence of the faithful, to perform this holy rite. Prepare yourselves, brothers!
The priest made a gesture with one of his shining clawed hands. The two young men within the circle looked straight at one another and raised their knives into the air.
Today,
continued the priest, his mask now looking upward,
we honor our gods, our lords beyond. Yet more than that, we honor ourselves. This world is a world of trials, a crucible where our weakness is burned away and transmuted into strength. Not all of you will end this day alive, yet those who do will be among the chosen, those who might ascend upward to join our lords.
One of the young men, the scrappier and shorter of the two, stepped forward, tossing his knife from left hand to right. The larger man raised his own weapon, preparing to jab down at his shorter opponent. As the duel began, there was something almost electrical in the air, a tightness building up, a kind of pressure. When I peeked over the stone, I could see it in the eyes of the villagers too. So focused, so dedicated to this ritual, immersed in the very moment of it. The priest began to chant as the young men fought, uttering throaty verses that sounded robotic under his metal mask. For a moment, I too felt like I could be drawn up into this ritual, like I could sense the energy of it all pulling at me also. The fervor, the strength, the sheer belief of these people that would cause them to throw everything away just for a chance to please some invisible gods. I shook it off as I turned away from the scene, bile building up in my throat. Scrag those fanatics, I told myself. No real god would want something like this. But down below, I could hear the sounds of blade against blade echoing up from the quarry. For a moment, I looked back. The scrappy lad planted his blade in the larger man's chest. As the blood oozed onto the ground, the priest looked up from his constant chant and shouted out one final syllable of it, raising his gauntleted hands to the sky.
Gervath!
He screamed into the air. That one I knew. A chief among the gods, the ruler of this world who they said watched from the eye above. As that name was shouted, more of those red-clad maniacs in the circle stepped forward, each holding identical daggers. Two began to fight, then two more. One man cleanly stabbing a woman in the throat. Another duo going at it with blade against blade, oblivious to the others fighting around them. The crowd, too, went wild as the priest screamed to the sky. Rocks, sticks, and chairs were flung through the air. Men screamed and grunted, groaned and fell as they were struck or hurled to the ground by their fellow celebrants. A few fled the scene and ran back to their village, but most stayed, enraptured by the priest's words and their sacred rite. Like the disciples at the bottom, many of them lost themselves. I ducked lower behind my boulder, intent on not being seen. Then I spied her. She stood out like pastel colors on shades of gray, almond-shaped eyes of a deep purple, and set into a flawless face, unmarred and smooth, with a tiny chin and a nose that was practically an afterthought. Her skin was the color of a cloudless blue sky, broken only by a spiraling white sigil at the center of her forehead. Above that, her cyan-colored hair fell in waves across her shoulders, as green, blue, and pristine as a rare mountain lake. Flowing, tattooed script stood out in white upon those shoulders, running down her arms and back behind the billowing cloak she wore, concealing most of her lithe body. She caught my eye, arms wide as she stood on the edge of a step, and stared as if in reverie down at the worst of the fighting. My first impression was that she didn't belong, as if her features had been carefully molded by some ancient artist from an age of delicate luxury. No, this pristine creature wasn't someone who had fought and bled for scraps of food. Not a girl of the river towns who tilled the fields or milked the dugga. What was she doing here? I noticed myself creeping closer and closer to where she stood. Yeah, stupid, I know. I knew then too. But I still did it, making sure to keep my head low as I drew ever closer, while the masked farmers screamed and chanted just feet away from me. peeked over my shoulder to see a real fight breaking out among them. Two strapping, mud-covered teens hammering their fists at one another, while a third suddenly joined in, kicking one in the side with a booted foot. I got within about 2 yards of the blue girl. Despite the raucous chaos going on around her, she was still standing there, arms limp at her sides and staring straight ahead. Probably in shock, I figured. At that moment, I saw something else. From her other side, there was a big, shirtless guy with a bulging potbelly, a layer of mud on his face and a thick log in both of his hands. He raised it aloft, looking about to pummel her. I wasn't sure why at the time, but something inspired me to do the moronic thing. I jumped right at the girl, knocking us both to the ground as my shoulders smacked into her waist. Then, as the dust flew around us, I was on top of her. No, not like that. Though I gotta admit the thought was there. Her deep purple eyes were still dilated, staring up at me, but possibly not aware of my presence just yet. She was a wisp of a woman, I realized, now that I was so close to her. Her flawless flesh hot to the touch, like someone in fever. Her shoulders gently rose and fell as she let out a breath. Then her expression changed, her lips curling as she looked straight into my eyes, with her own otherworldly orbs. Then my eyes fell upon those tattoos of hers, spiraling patterns of intricate sigils that wound their way from the bottoms of her cheeks all the way down her bodice and likely beyond, inked in the purest white. As those two eyes grew lucid, she looked up at me with the weirdest dang expression. A little shock, maybe, with a tad annoyance thrown in, but most of all, topped with a cool curiosity. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught a glimpse of the pot-bellied guy with his log, now completely ignoring us as a muscular man tried to choke him from behind. "Hey," I said, thinking maybe that I should be introducing myself, saying something smart or whatever. I stopped myself. Actually, maybe we should just get out of here. I gestured upward with a hand that was not currently planted on her shoulder. Well, that's the crazy stuff going on here. As I noted this, I saw a nearby farmhand crack a straw chair over his friend's head while shouting some incomprehensible deity's name. We got to our feet, and without thinking much about it, I took the girl's hand, and we shimmied up the quarried steps and got right out of there. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space God Memoirs. Space God is written, performed, and produced by A.M. Arctos. Original musical score by Alpha Colors. Various sound effects created by Industrial Strength Records Incorporated. Please support this podcast by following, rating, and sharing on your favorite social media site. For further info on Space God, its creator, and various other opinions, musings, and thoughts, go to www.spacegodmemoirs.com or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you enjoyed the Space God Memoirs, please consider supporting us by becoming a patron. Check out the Patreon link in our description to learn more.